Okay, it's always great to speak to old friends. And I don't necessarily mean years, although I've known David for, 33, 34, a long time. When he was 16, I knew him. Hello, David.
Hello, yeah. Yes, it's been a long time. When did we first meet? It was Santa Barbara in the 1990s.
Yeah, well, early 90s. It was in Montecito at Janie's house. Remember Janie? Nice lady.
Vaguely.
Had a beautiful home in Montecito. Anyway, you were there. I think you spent the night there once. And then you appeared, and this is interesting for all of you out there, David Icke fans, and there are many of you listening. David's first, and he'll tell you the story, the first time he spoke to more than half a dozen people, so to speak. We had a full house in Santa Barbara, and I think it was around 93, 92, whatever. And we had a full house. It must have been 300 people or more there. And I introduced David, and from that point on, it was like he ignited. The people understood that the message they were hearing was something new and unprecedented in terms of reality. And remember that? That was a great night.
Yeah, because what was happening is I was going around America talking to nobody, often close to literally. And every now and again, just when you were going, oh, what's the point? You'd turn up at an event and there'd be a lot of people there, and you think, okay, it's worth continuing. So it happened one or two times, and that was one occasion when it happened.
It was wonderful. The people they heard you. And I said, this man is going, I knew you were going to be an institution, so to speak. And you have been, and you still are. The new book, David's new book, The Reveal, is out. And if you look under his name and guests, you'll be able to click right on it and get it. You can go to the David Icke bookstore as well. I don't know how many books you've done. How many books have you done now? 20?
Nearly 30 now.
30, see?
Yeah, nearly 30, yeah.
It's an astonishing assemblage of wisdom and truth, truly.
Well, I think, you know, I've always gone on the basis of whatever you think you know, there's always more to know. And I think what happens with many people is they go so far and then they think, I got it now.
And David, hold on. I got to tag on to that. You are so right. And what happens as soon as they say, I've got it, they're out of the hunt.
Yeah, they're out of the hunt. And so if you keep being driven by, okay, I think I got this now, but what more is there to know? It means that you're constantly pushing the cutting edge and going deeper and deeper and deeper into the whole rabbit hole. And you continually, it's a funny kind of sequence, because you'll say things and then they'll be proved right. I mean, the COVID period was a classic, and people will say, "Yeah, he was right, wasn't he?" But then you're going, "Okay, so what more is there to know?" And when you go into the next stage, the same people start the same sequence. They go, "Oh no, it's gone too far this time. Oh no, too far this time. That's ridiculous. That's far out." And that sequence just continues. But you know, the point is that if you're a researcher, what people think of you must be irrelevant. It has to be irrelevant, because if it's not irrelevant, then you're going to constantly censor yourself on the basis of what will people say if I say this. And so you've got to be someone who has let go that fear of what other people think and the concern of what other people think,
right,
because
right.
What you're after is the truth. And obviously, in a world of untruth, monumental untruth, then when you're seeking the truth, you're going to go into areas that lots of people are going to think are far out and can't be. But mm-hmm. I think where we are, Jeff, is in a situation now where all bets are off. I mean, what is fantastic anymore? What is far out anymore when you see the sort of things that are going on, not least in Britain?
And where do you see them going on your screen, whether it's your desktop, your portable laptop, your phone, your big screen? What you see on the screen is just what David said. It's fantastic. It's crazy. It's like all bets are off. That is being purveyed, and to a significant degree it is, reality. And that staring and that reactive mental condition creates reality in the mind of the masses. That's their reality, whether they want to think about it or not. The old saw about repeating it X number of times and people will accept it is true. You see the same. And the stuff that's going on now, as you say, is phenomenally crazy. It's nuts.
Well, what we're now entering is the death knell of that phrase that we both heard so many times over so many decades. They'd never do that. That is now over. Because there is nothing they wouldn't do to get the global dystopia that they've been working towards all this time. And, you know, it comes down to that there are certain simple techniques that just keep being repeated, like divide and rule. You know, when there's a relative handful in full knowledge of what they do, what they're doing, where they're taking the world, and the target population is billions, then you can't physically control those billions. You can do it eventually when you connect artificial intelligence to their mind and their mind becomes artificial intelligence. That's, right. Then you can do it. Up to that point, you can't. What you have to do is get the population to do and behave you want them to, as in a way that suits you, and therefore you must control their perception. I mean, what is AI connection to the human mind except control of perception, the ultimate control of perception in many ways? So it's about control of perception. So if you can get two, for instance, which we're seeing in Britain now, if you can get two mentalities and call them different names and put different labels on their doors and play them off against each other, then you're going to create massive upheaval. The population's going to be fighting itself rather than looking up and seeing the strings on both sides held by the same hand. So this situation that we're facing in Britain now has come over a very long period of time, and it's really, really moved since the premiership of Tony Blair, the war criminal, who is...
what a hideous, satanic figure that guy is. Awful.
Well, it's the global cult owned to his DNA. I mean, whenever his lips move, the global cult network is speaking. So people might not realize this, but... there was a whistleblower from within the Blair regime who a little later revealed that the Tony Blair period was one in which they set out to change the nature of Britain in a way that was irreversible through mass immigration from other cultures. So it really went into overdrive then. And of course, it's gone on and it's gone on and it's gone on. And now it's basically the floodgates are open. And this has been one part of a pincer movement in which you open the doors. This is happening in America, of course, through the southern border and so on. You open the doors and you let enormous numbers of people from another culture to come in. This goes on being perpetuated until areas of cities that people grew up in and knew is now a completely different culture. But at the same time, this is the pincer movement, the same, and massively Israel networks have been involved in that open door policy. I mean, you've got people like George Soros, of course. He's open society foundations, open border foundations.
Right. Yeah.
In both Europe and in America and the southern border. But the other pincer movement is the same networks that have been behind that fund other groups that oppose the influx of people. So you create this this divide and rule situation, which is now kind of broken out in Britain. And when you look at, I've looked at history many times and the recurring themes. One of them is that what you do if you want conflict is you ignore injustice. You ignore people's legitimate concerns to the point where they either accept those injustices and those concerns being ignored, or so what they're doing all the time is winding this up. Now, what you would do if you were serious about stopping the divide and rule and the conflict is you do something about the flow of people into Britain that are illegal, unregulated. No one knows who they are. You'd stop the process giving them accommodation and money, which the population doesn't get, for coming into the country illegally, and you do something about that. You do something about the concerns of vast numbers of people. I'm not talking about people that riot in the streets. I'm talking about the general population, including many of the migrants that have now become resident, who are concerned about this as well. You do something about it. The fact that they're because, they're doing nothing. And there's obvious reason that they're doing nothing, because we come back to this thing of perception. The one thing that this this cult is brilliant at, and that is manipulating perception, but also predicting responses to certain situations. And so the idea is to open the borders to create this situation that's now happening. Absolutely, if you want to wind this up, you don't want to do anything about the borders. You want more and come in illegally, because that's winding up the tension and what have you. I mean, of course, the other of this is a phrase I came up with in the 1990s: problem, reaction, solution. And again, it's a perceptual.
I was just going to mention that divide and rule, and doesn't that bring us full circle back to what you were talking about in the beginning? Problem, reaction, solution. You're right. And these people out there, nothing is happening except the opposite of what common sense would tell them. And now you're beginning to see in Britain, for those of you who don't know, the rage of the British people. They're beginning to hit the streets. And they're being met with madness from their alleged government. This Starmer character, he's just another Kabbalist in my view, but whatever.
The thing about Keir Starmer is what is happening now is unbelievably predictable. When the Starmer government got in a few weeks ago, they got 34% of the people who voted for them.
That's it. That's right.
If you take the people who had the right to vote, who didn't because they thought, well, what's the point? There's no one to vote for. Then that 34% is even smaller. And what they've done is they've come in and they've said, we have a mandate, and therefore we're going to do what we like. And the so-called mandate comes from as you have in America, although it's simpler in America because you've basically got two parties. But in this country, when you have first past the post elections, if there is a split in the vote of the different parties that people have a chance to vote for, then people can get in. They usually do with substantially less than half of the population voting for them. They could become the government.
Very true.
And
very true.
This Starmer government has got in with fewer votes than the Labour Party got under the previous leader, Jeremy Corbyn. And he stepped down because of the nature of the result. Uh-huh. And so with fewer votes, they've now got this massive majority tyranny. Now, Keir Starmer, as I was going to say, when they got in, I said this government is going to be the most despised, or at least one of the most despised and opposed in British political history, because I knew where they were going, because this guy, Starmer, is a 100% owned asset of this global cult through the World Economic Forum. I don't know if you've seen the clip on the internet where he's asked, this is before he was elected, if you had a choice to make between Parliament and Davos, which would you choose? And he said, Davos. He said, because there's all partisan kind of stuff going on in Parliament. But in Davos, they're people that want to get things done. And so that was a classic expression of who Keir Starmer is. He's a former member, it says former member, of the Trilateral Commission, for instance. And right. And so what he's doing is quite simple. I keep saying this to people, what's going on? That's what he's following the World Economic Forum wish list. That's what he's doing.
Getting things done, right? Exactly what he just said.
And one of those wish list desires is the end of freedom of speech and freedom of opinion, freedom of expression.
Yep.
So in this perceptual cocktail manipulation that we're seeing, you've had in rule where you create the problem you create the conflict. And then you use the conflict to delete freedom of speech on the basis of we can't have this. So we're having a you know, of minds here, and people are going to have to start deciding if they want to submit to tyranny or if they want to refuse to accept it, because the more that they impose extreme jail sentences for just posting on the internet,
right.
Then the more people, if we don't stiffen the backbone, are going to stop posting anything on the internet related to
self-censor. Self-censor about. Themselves into oblivion is what they'll do. They'll be afraid.
Exactly. The word
fear. Yeah. I'm appalled at what I see. And who is this? Is it a police chief or whoever the hell it is over there claiming he's going to go after anybody on planet Earth and issue an arrest warrant and seek to have them extradited back to Britain for trial, and then they'll salt them away in some death house? This is madness, even that it can be spoken from a government or public servant, police chief, perspective is, to me, astounding, what I'm hearing. That's madness, that kind of talk.
Yeah, what I've been observing over many, many decades is the transformation of what you call in America law enforcement into a combination of psychopaths and morons. Psychopaths who will carry this tyranny out without question and love it And then the morons, what I call yes sir morons, who just do whatever they're told without question. And I've seen the decent, balanced police officers being replaced and replaced and replaced. And in the same period in Britain, you've seen the uniforms of the police transform from what they were to to now basically a form of military uniform. And this is all part of this dystopian transformation of the police. Now, we shouldn't be surprised at what's going on now when we've been through the COVID period, because, you know, I was heavily involved in the challenge to the COVID restrictions and fascism. And I saw the police become just an army for the state that would just lose all sense of balance and perspective. And that's not something that happened during COVID and then went away. It's in there. It's in the deep. Therefore, when something else comes along, and this is another version of the COVID restrictions, what's happening now, is it's going to break out again, because it's there, it's latent, it just needs a trigger, and it's repeated. What we're seeing with the police reaction.
How did the police, first of all, you mentioned how they were culled, the good cops, good people. They were culled and replaced with lunatics, almost fanaticism. Yeah. How was it that this mental derangement was successfully inculcated into most of the police in Britain to the extent that what we see going on in the streets, this anti-white, it's racist, is now considered normal? I'm seeing it all the time over here, and I can't believe what I'm seeing. Who the hell are these people?
It's happened all over the world. It's happened in Australia. I mean, this is a global agenda, so it will have a global expression. Right. But what's been happening is that there are, in terms of police training, and you'll see this in so many other institutions of state, but in police training, the programming, the indoctrination of political correctness has gone on and on and on, got more and more extreme. And the police training is now a mind control operation. You have people, like during the BLM riots in Britain, you had police officers, you can see pictures of it on the internet, taking the knee when they're supposed to be protecting Downing Street. Unreal. So there's these police officers, they're outside Downing Street, the home of the Prime Minister, and there's all this these protesters, BLM protesters, and these police officers take the knee in front of them. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, it is.
And of it course, Starmer was taking the knee with his deputy leader of the Labour Party during the same period, the same Starmer that's now targeting people in this extraordinary extreme way. And so you're looking at an agenda, and you're looking at a perception control operation, which has taken over the mentality of the police. And also, you know, if you know as a police officer that if you do certain things and you make certain judgments, that you're going to get enormous backlash and you're going to be called racist and all the rest of it, then that's going to affect whether how you're going to from people. And we've had this this big debate going on in Britain about what they call not two-tier policing, but two-tier policing, appropriately, where different groups within society are treated in a different way. Now, why is that? do the government care about Muslims? No, of course not. They don't care about anyone in the population. Do they care about Hindus? No, they could care less about that. But by emphasizing in your policing one group, you are going to antagonize anger and make furious, compounding over the years, another group, and therefore you are openly perpetuating injustice, two-tier policing, because you actually want to see that injustice. You want them to. You want to make it so obvious, because then some of them will react the way you want them to. And when they react, then you say, we can't have this. We must impose these fascist restrictions on freedom of speech. It's all a perception manipulation game. And what I keep saying to people, whether you're Muslim or Hindu or, you know, white, British, whatever, you're being played by the same force. You may think, oh, it's great because, you know, things are happening for us that are, you know, are not happening for other people, but you're being played. And it's been my contention for years and years. I've written it at length in the books. That what we're looking at is the systematic dismantling of Western society. So
systematic dismantling of Western society, white Western Christian European society. The systematic destruction. They're picking it apart. Go ahead.
They're taking it apart, and a lot of it's coming out of the networks of the Israeli government and the intelligence agencies like Mossad, etc.
You betcha. Yeah.
In Israel, and this is the thing. You see, a lot of these what are termed far right people, protesters, etc. They are very pro. But anti-immigration, and it's like you crunch your face in frustration. Can't you see that the same mm-hmm. force that's opened the borders is what you are at the same time?
The answer to that is when you ask them, David, can't you see if it's not on the screen, they can't. They're being denied that reality in an audiovisual sense because of their screen addiction and screen domination. And I'm talking about cell phones to big screens. I don't care. It's a audio-video world that these people live in now. And if they're not shown it, it doesn't exist.
Which
it's
is
a
all
de facto
part of this
sense. Thing. Yes.
I mean,
yes.
This whole smartphone society, it's all obviously...
Yeah,
part of the perception mind control that's going on. But if we go back to the dismantling of West, it explains a lot of things. First of all, if you want to dismantle a culture, first of all, you have to open the borders for other cultures to come in. Yes, but you have to target the biggest racial group. In other words, cultural group in Western society. So this is why you can say what you like about white people, and that's not a problem. Say anything about other cultures, and that's a problem. You'll get you jailed.
Yeah.
Then, you know, I'm not a Christian. I don't follow any religion. But, you know, for historical reasons, the Western society has developed historically in line with the Christian religion. And so you can say what you like about the Christian religion. There's not a problem. Say anything about any other religions and there's a problem. You can get you jailed. You know, you're looking at the explanations for the injustice and the partisan nature of policing and government. once you realize that dismantling Western culture is fundamental, because if you want a global society in which there's a world government which is appointed in the end, not elected, a technocracy, and you want to impose that, then you have to bring everything to that's different to heal. You have to bring everything that might resist that to heal. And this is why I say to people who think get the white man and all that stuff. I mean, for me, the body is a vehicle for consciousness to experience this reality. So that's where I'm coming from in terms of, you know, people.
Got it.
You're a racist if you say this. No, it's nothing to do with racism. It's to do with seeing what's actually happening. And so what you're looking at is, first of all, the major racial group of Western society being systematically targeted, because you've got to bring them to heel. But what I say to people is, when they've done that, they're coming for you. You know, it's classic, like the pastor in Nazi Germany. First they came for the socialists. I was not a socialist, so I did nothing. Then they came for the communists. I was not a communist. And then they came for the Jews. I was not a Jew, so I did nothing. This is what they're doing. And so, first of all, they want to bring the major racial group of Western society under control and suppressed. And then they'll come for the other groups, because this is a global dystopia. Like I say, it's so important for people to grasp this is not about supporting Muslims because they're Muslims. It's not about supporting other cultures because they're other cultures. It's about the destruction of Western society, the road to the subjugation of global society, no matter what your racial and religious background.
Right. Exactly right. I don't see a real good future, immediate future, for the UK, for Britain. I'm not sure if we should look at what's happening over there as a beta test, but I think we probably ought to consider that. They did run a lot of tests with Australia, various operations and restrictions. And I think what we're seeing in England may well now be the model, the hoped-for model, that the elitists want to install over here and elsewhere. It looks to me like Europe is going down.
Well, 100% in terms of Britain. If you go back to the COVID era, not so much Scotland and Wales, by the way,
right.
But England. This is where we had a globally significant pushback on the restrictions. In the early days, there were a handful of people that went out in protest at the suppression and the impositions, and they were picked off by the police very unpleasantly because there weren't many of them. In the end, and I was involved in all this, there were hundreds of thousands of people walking through the streets of London in protest at the restrictions, and the police were just standing on the side of the road looking on. There's nothing they could do because there's too many people. So a lot of people were contacting me around the world and places like Australia and stuff, and saying, you know, Britain, England actually, not even Britain, is a shining light in terms of pushing back on this. And I think in many ways, if you can subjugate Britain into a docile dystopia, and people just self-censor, as you were talking about, and just do what they're told and don't complain, then that has a massive impact globally as well. If you can get that in place, then you can go for other places. In fact, you know, places like Australia, in many ways, until recently, have been further along the road than we are even in Britain now. And so it's a systematic perceptual program that's going on. And if they can get Britain under the heel, then that they will find it easier to go for other people.
I like what you just said. Systematic program. It's a projection program, and it's projected through the screen. It's all about watching it, listening to it. People, they are addicted. The screen addiction is their end. Now, you know who John O'Looney is, right? The funeral home director over there. You must, of course. Yeah. Here's a little two-minute clip about John. He's like we are, very much aware and very angry about this whole thing. I think he's pretty damn on top of it, like you are. Here, let's take a listen here. This is just 2 minutes.
Hi guys, July the 18th, 2024, and I'm watching with interest as they're ramping up, aren't they? High-profile COVID cases. Joe Biden's got COVID. No, he hasn't. He's probably vaccine-injured because he's had at least six or eight now, hasn't he? Really, this message is directly at the funeral directors and the people in the industry who know the truth. You know the truth. You know who's dying. You know what they're dying from, and they're just ramping up for another one. What are you going to do? What are you going to do when they mandate in your workplace co-op funeral care workers? What are you going to do? Are you going to take it again to keep your job as all your colleagues get sick and die and have heart attacks around you? It's fucking mental, you know? And the doctors, what are you going to do? You're going to take the money and spend the money, buy the car that the missus wouldn't let you buy with that extra money as your patients die around you, or are you going to speak out and tell the truth? Or are you just going to kill off these poor people with ventilation, with remdesivir and with midazolam and pretend and go along with it? You know, oh, it's not me. I'll just keep my head down. I've seen your faces in here as you've spoke to me. I've seen the look of shame on doctors' faces. I've listened to nurses crying down the fucking phone. I've got dozens and dozens of them. Most of these poor souls were the ones with consciences who have reached out. Well, they've left nursing. Who does that leave in the hospitals? The psychopaths, the ones that would do as they're told to do, the agency nurses from Africa who will just stick that needle in patients because that's what they're told to do. They're ramping up for another load of bollocks. Some of it will be probably delivered by 5G. The rest of it is going to be just malfeasance in the hospitals. You know, we all know it. It's the worst kept secret in the funeral industry and in the healthcare industry. And as one doctor said to me, they all know, yes, yes, they all know. Of course they fucking know. Of course they know. So we've got a clear choice now, haven't we? Because they haven't actually announced it yet. But when they do, what side of history are you going to be on? Are you going to tell the truth so we can collectively say, bollocks, no, we're not doing it? Or are you going to watch as your neighbours are forced vaccinated and their livelihoods ruined and people are killed in hospitals and killed with lethal jabs all over again? Are you going to do it again?
There you go. That's John O'Looney speaking. And Britain seems to have been particularly savagely ravaged by these bioweapons. And I don't know why, but John O'Looney, he's on the front lines. They bring bodies in to his funeral home every day, but they don't now. You know why? Because he can't take anymore. He's overloaded. He has no ability to take new clients with their loved ones dead. That's how bad it is there.
Yeah.
And what do we see? Go ahead.
John O'Looney's a good guy, and not least in the sense that he's willing to say things that others in his profession are not. He's been a real exposer of the effects of this fake vaccine. And, you know, we're talking here about perception control. And this is my take, having looked at this over a long period of time. I go into this in detail in parts of the reveal. You look at Elon Musk and Neuralink, where they take skull away and puts things, probes in your brain and all that stuff. Right. And people look at that and they say, oh, well, you know, that's never going to be happening all over because, who's going to have a public skull taken away? But the thing about Elon Musk much of what he does is selling a concept, a concept of something like, mind control and whatever through a connection, AI connection to the brain. But actually, in around that, while that takes the headlines, and people think that maybe that's the cutting edge. Oh, yeah, Neuralink, that must be the cutting edge of AI brain interface. But actually, all around us, it's going on. So when you look at the effect of this fake vaccine and the self-replicating nanotechnology systems that are forming in the body and in the brain, this is why so many people have gone very strange in terms of their behavior since having the fake vaccine. You're looking at AI being connected to the human mind, the human brain, controlling human perception.
Yes, yes.
And the interface is not taking part of your skull away. The interface is between the self-replicating systems, which of course are expanding all the time, and the what they call the cloud, which is 4G, 5G, 6G, 7G to come, 6G already in the pipeline, that are coming out of the towers in urban areas, but are crucially coming from space and low orbit satellites, not those of SpaceX and Musk, among others. This is the interface that's happening. And this is why it's so significant that in the vials of this fake vaccine has been found graphene oxide. Graphene oxide is an amplifier of electromagnetism in the body and also a superconductor of electricity. Now, if you get that stuff in the brain, it's going to impact on the brain function and how the neurons fire and all these things. And so what we're looking at is the taking over of the human mind via an AI body interface, which this fake vaccine is primarily about, in my view. And what you're having as a result of that is graphene oxide being exposed to the body in every way you possibly can. So you've got graphene oxide in the chemtrails. That's been found in the chemtrails because it's about taking over the perceptual functions of the body brain. That's what's happening. And therefore, people who are impacted by this are actually more and more becoming what would virtual reality game non-player characters. They're not playing the
non-player
game.
Non-player characters. Non-player. That's good. Very good.
The game is playing them. If you look at a non-player character in a virtual reality game, they are part of the game. They're part of the background of the game. They're part of what the player with in the game, but they're not themselves making decisions to play the game. The game is playing them, and the whole idea is to have fewer and fewer people playing the game, consciously playing the game, seeing the game, perceiving the game, resisting the game, and more and more people who become non-player characters and just do what the game tells them to do. This is what is happening. And people are seeing it. Everyday experience with family members and acquaintances and work mates that they're not the same. You know, my brother has been repairing buses on the sides of motorways, freeways, for nearly 50 years. going out on 24-hour call when a bus breaks down to get it going again on the side of the road or a service area, whatever. And what this has done is allow him to continually meet the same people over and over and over again.
Got it.
And he is, he says very, very, very clear that so many of the people that had this jab, multiple jabs often, they are not the same people anymore. They're not. They're perceptually, mentally not the same people.
I can't, David, I can't tell you, I can't tell you, I want to underscore this, how many reports we have received and read, my mother has never been the same since she took the shot. My father, my brother, my cousin, my wife, never been the same since they took the jab. So I amen to that. I'm right with you. Go ahead.
Yeah, and so obviously the emphasis has been, and understandably and quite right, on the physical expressions of this fake vaccine. But the psychological ones is monumentally important. And why are there physical effects? Because what's happening is the self-replicating nanotechnology, as it expands its impact on the body, some people will be able to transform with it and basically stay alive, but others won't. There'll be a bodily resistance to it. And it's amazing when you see, I've seen many examples of this, the blown up pictures of blood of not just fake vaccinated people, but others who haven't had the fake vaccine as well. And you see these systems that are developing and expanding in the body. I've been contacted some quite a few months ago now by a research organization in Spain called La Quinta Columna. And they contacted me because they said, our research says that what you were saying about the COVID and the vaccine is true. Well, there was one experiment they did where they got a vial of this fake vaccine and they put it in an incubator at body temperature, because of course this stuff is kept very, very cold, inactive, and it's activated at body temperature, and they put it in this incubator, and at the start the picture was, it was quite clear. And then very quickly, these amazing systems started to appear over days, you know. So people, you know, they think COVID has passed, but the reason for it and the effects of it ongoing are absolutely central to this whole agenda of human control by control of perception.
Got it. It's all... And it's all being done, orchestrated, implemented, installed through the screens. That those screens are the reality, again, for most people. Now, they have choices to make, which line of BS or fiction do they want to resonate with. And they'll pick it up and they'll run with it. And they'll try to convince anybody they know who talks to them, well, this is the way it really is. Or that's the way it really is. And I've never seen anything like this, the control of humanity, is stunning. It's extraordinary.
The thing is,
and you're one of the very first people to ever talk about this. Go ahead.
The thing about the screens and this technology in general, and I do smile and shake my head when people say, or, you know, Silicon Valley heroes like Musk say, or, you know, AI could be the end of humanity, and they just go on turning out more and more AI. I mean, excuse me, is there a bit of a contradiction here? But the whole screen thing is, and technology thing is, you didn't need it before, but what we're going to do is we're going to make it something you didn't need before to be in your perception essential to your life's existence and your life in general every day. And I'm a researcher. I've been researching this now for 35 years.
Yeah.
And I don't have one of these bloody screens, these smartphone things. So if I can research this stuff and not need that, well,
yeah,
just reevaluate whether you actually need it. That it's so essential to your life you can't do without it.
Well, they've made you're right.
It. They've made it's it essential to your life.
It is wickedly addictive, whether you're a TikTok junkie or whatever. Porn is huge, of course. I'm just telling you that from my perspective, and I think I can say our perspective, this is one hell of a paradigm of control, these screens. It's remarkable. Tell yeah, our listeners.
Just quickly, that I thought for a long time now, something's coming off those screens. There's a frequency.
You
there's
betcha.
A frequency,
yeah, yeah.
Which
they can embed
creating,
all kinds of things in there.
It's
yeah.
creating addiction. It's like you see people. They're looking at these screens and scrolling forever, and then they put it down. And in a few seconds or minutes, they're picking it up and they're going it again because their brain has become addicted to what comes off the screen, and it goes into cold turkey when you're not scrolling. It's absolutely systematically addicted.
It's true, and I think that there is some trigger, among other things, for the release of endorphins from the brain, rewards. Okay, I've made a post on Facebook. I got 347 likes. I get a hit off that somehow, whether it's psychologically induced or electromagnetically induced with radiation, EMF, coming off that screen. There's a reward. Yeah. This is classic Pavlov, and I'm appalled by it. It's so brilliant. They've done it. A quick comment, and we have to run on the reveal. What does it cover? What can David Icke fans look for in the book?
Well, it's like we started out today talking about whatever you know, there's always more to know. And I've just pushed on and pushed on and pushed on. And this is as deep in the rabbit hole as I've ever gone so far. And it's everything from current events within the massively bigger picture than they're presented by people like Alex Jones and Tucker Carlson and such, Joe Rogan, whatever. And it also goes into the bigger picture of what people call the Matrix and the fact that there are other levels to it that are beyond what we call the human world. Wow. And that what we call reincarnation is actually a massive trap within a multi-level matrix and not heaven as people think it is. That what people perceive as heaven is beyond this matrix construct. But what happens is the people are, whether they're in the body or out of the body is just consciousness or soul, they are still part of a perceptual control system which perpetuates itself. So I do produce the evidence to support that, by the way. It's not just far out speculation.
Very good. All right. Thanks for getting up in the middle of the night. As always, my friend, you take care of yourself and we'll be in touch.
Okay, Jeff. See you, mate.
All right. All righty. Good night. Mr. David Icke. And we'll pause on that note and come right back.